You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio from South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Jonah Chester. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, March 12, 2018.
The Afghans are extraordinary people. I have the highest regard for them. And I see them as very resilient. I see them as very courageous. There are a lot of chapters in Hopeless But Optimistic that talk about their love of beauty, their love of poetry, the way they see the world.
Later in the program, WFHB correspondent Michael Glab speaks with war correspondent Doug Wissing about his latest book on Afghanistan. That's coming up on today's edition of Big Talk Extra with Michael Glab.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Ellen Jakehart works with MC-IRIS, that is Monroe County Identify and Reduce Invasive Species. That's coming up later in the program on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, here's your daily headlines.
Federal intelligence services believe Russian government employees probed state voter registration rolls for possible weaknesses in 2016. Indiana Secretary of State Connie Lawson published an editorial this morning saying the Russian government targeted state voter information databases. Indiana Secretary of State Communications Director Ian Hauer says Russian agents probed weaknesses in state voter registration records.
So what the scams were is just actors basically going through, and the term we use is rattling doorknobs, just to check and see if there are any vulnerabilities within a given state or federal system that can be exploited.
While state voter databases may have been the victims of probes, Hauer says the Indiana Secretary of State's office is confident no personal information was taken from Indiana residents.
The data on our statewide voter registration system is, we're very confident that it is secure, and the information that is stored there is whatever a person would register to vote with. So that would include names, addresses, voting history, not who they voted for, but just did they vote in the 2016 election, the 2014 election, so on and so forth.
Secretary of State Lawson is also an executive member of the newly formed Government Coordinating Council. That council works with intelligence services to direct federal resources to local and statewide election security. The Secretary of State is the highest-ranking elections official in each state and is ultimately responsible for election security. In the editorial piece, Lawson writes, the council is the first collaboration between federal, state, and local officials to prevent interference in elections. Lawson also stresses spending on cybersecurity measures at both the local and federal levels. She writes, quote, upgrading technology and investing in staff with cyber expertise at the state and local level will carry a significant price tag, and this must be a continuous effort. This is a race with no finish line, unquote. Lawson ended the op-ed by encouraging Indiana residents to continue taking part in the electoral process and to vote in state and local elections. The Indiana primary is May 8th, and midterm elections are scheduled for this November.
Activists will protest two bills at the Indianapolis State House tomorrow. Members of the nonprofit activist group Hoosier Action will board a bus in Bloomington tomorrow morning. The protesters will rally at the State House against two bills, House Bill 1359, which charges opioid dealers with murder if their customer overdoses, and House Bill 1319, which would have raised payday loan interest rates. House Bill 1319 was killed in committee last month, but on their Facebook page, Hoosier Action members stated that they want to ensure there's, quote, no trickery, unquote, or revival of the bill. House Bill 1359 is heading to Governor Eric Holcomb's desk. Brian Jablonski is a member of Hoosier Action. He says the group is pushing for the opioid crisis to be treated as a public health crisis.
Tomorrow, we basically have a lot of speakers lined up, anywhere from drug addicts who are clean now, all the way to medical professionals. We're basically trying to gain sympathy, I guess, if you want to use that word. We're trying to get people to understand that this is not just a person being weak or somebody out just to have fun, but we're trying to get them to understand that addiction is an actual disease and there's more to it than what a lot of people think. We're also advocating for things like safe injection sites, needle exchange programs.
Jablonski says Hoosier Action is rallying against House Bill 1359 tomorrow and trying to promote public health understanding of addiction.
We're trying to do away with some of these laws, like the one that's coming out that is saying that you can get charged with murder if you sell dope to somebody who ends up dying, because the situation might be, you know, you're with your friend and you guys both buy the same bag, and then, you know, say he overdoses, but you're the one who paid for the bag. Well, you guys were both in it for the same reason, but now you're being charged with murder. But more than anything, we're just trying to raise consciousness about the whole topic and the whole issue, and we just want people to have a better understanding of what addiction really is.
Hoosier Action will be joined by several other community organizations during tomorrow's rally at the State House. The Indiana Recovery Alliance is also protesting House Bill 1359. Founder Chris Abert says the organization is taking part in a people's forum at the State House.
So tomorrow we're joined by a few friends. So it'll be the Indiana Recovery Alliance, Overdose Lifeline, Hoosier Action, and a few other organizations, the Indiana Harm Reduction Coalition, and others. And the idea will be that the legislature, really, for all of the talk of moving forward on addressing the opioid crisis, they really didn't do anything. They had a coroner's bill. They had a few other bills, but nothing that's going to actually make a difference on the ground in people's lives immediately.
Abert says tomorrow's forum will allow people to tell their stories and share their struggles with addiction.
So what we're hoping to do with People's Forum is to give people directly impacted by the opioid epidemic the opportunity to get up behind a mic and tell about their experience, you know, navigating through our system, right? Navigating through the system that the legislators have created.
Abert also says that people who use drugs together are often friends or relatives, and that House Bill 1359 would punish people facing addiction by arresting the bereaved.
Oftentimes I'll have family members call me and they're saying, oh, I just dread getting the call, right? And they're referring to the call that their loved one has died. This is going to add another call that's going to be a dread, and it's going to be that two friends are using together. One of them died and the other is now facing murder charges.
House Bill 1359 is currently awaiting a signature by Governor Eric Holcomb.
The Bloomington Rail Trail will be closed to the public from today until Friday for maintenance. The Bloomington Parks and Recreation Department will be removing invasive plants on the portion of the trail between Country Club Drive and Rohrer Road. The department will be working with EcoLogic, a local ecological restoration service, to remove 6 acres of invasive plants from the land surrounding the trail. The project is targeting two invasive plant species, Asian bush honeysuckle and purple winter creeper. Both species have become very well established along the trail, according to a press release from the Parks and Rec Department. After the removal of the invasives, the city will be planting native plants and grasses to recuperate damages done by the invasive species. The Parks and Rec Department is also planning on utilizing limited amounts of herbicide along the trail in order to prevent a resurgence of the invasive species, according to the press release. Workers will be stationed at the north and south ends of the rail trail for the duration of the project to prevent visitors from entering. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Jonah Chester.
And I'm Carolyn Vanderweel. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Author, journalist, and war correspondent Doug Wissing is writing a biography of Hoosier Benjamin C. Evans, Jr., one of the most powerful men in Washington, spanning the presidencies of Lyndon Johnson through Ronald Reagan. Before this project, Wissing spent several stints embedded with U.S. Army combat soldiers in Afghanistan, experiences that resulted in two books, Funding the Enemy and Hopeless but Optimistic. Wissing calls Afghanistan a failed war. He talks about the effects of the longest war in American history as he joins Big Talk's Michael Glab.
I learned about the failed war from the soldiers.
Yeah.
And from the contractors. And they're the ones. And maybe in front of the curtain, they would have to say one thing, but you'd be walking down a hallway and they'd be saying, do you know about this? Have you looked at that website?
Yeah.
They also understand. They got to stay in their lane. They got to do their job, and they did do their job. I mean, I can tell you, when I went back to do the research for Hopeless but Optimistic, one of the questions I had was, it was obvious that everybody sort of knew it was a failed enterprise. And I wanted to understand, how did groups of humans, as in our soldiers, how did they operate? Did they have that same level of courage and honor?
Mm-hmm.
You know, really live, very vital. They're not ephemera.
Yeah.
These are very real things when you're in that situation. You bond up pretty tight with people. And I wanted to see, do they keep it together? And I can report, yes, they did.
Hmm.
It was a failed war, but they continued to operate in the way that I had seen them do it before.
You know, the things you witness and experience in war are so trying to the psyche. And one way to get through it is to believe you have the moral high ground as a soldier and as an army. But if you don't believe that, it makes it that much harder. What do you think about that idea?
Well, I saw a lot of soldiers that got extremely disillusioned. And we have to understand that now it's a volunteer army. Less than 1% of the U.S. population serves in the armed forces. And since 9/11, we have asked that small subset of Americans to serve multiple rotations. I met one guy who had 13 rotations. 5 rotations is not that uncommon. And multiple brain traumas. I mean, there
wow.
are. I talked to one combat trauma expert, essentially a combat counselor, and she was having to devise protocols for soldiers that had so many brain traumas, the number is now failing. Let's say a dozen concussions, dozen, you know, IEDs going off, you know, MRAPs rolling over and banging your head, that kind of stuff. And to where they had no short-term memory. So visualize being on patrol with a soldier who has no short-term memory.
That puts the onus on everybody else around him to sort of cover for him in a way.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about the money, $44
billion, yeah,
$1 trillion. But the other thing that we don't really cope with is the incredible human tragedy of this ongoing war, this endless war. Just last year, there were tens of thousands of Afghan casualties, combatants and civilians, including almost 1,000 children killed, including well over 2,500 children wounded. This is out of a population of 25, 30 million people.
Right.
In terms of our soldiers, from these two post 9/11 wars, there are 1,600 amputees. There are 700,000 vets that are 30% or more disabled, 327,000 vets with traumatic brain injuries. PTSD is absolutely rampant. The VA is overwhelmed with post 9/11 injuries and wounds. And we're not even really talking about the psychic wounds. I know soldiers that are just everybody knows soldiers that are just struggling, families.
Right.
Yeah, I just, the price of this is pretty hard. And most of that burden is falling on our military families. They're the ones having to care for these people.
Doug, how does this make you feel about your country?
It makes me feel like my country needs to make Congress do the right thing. A congressman, I sat in his office once and he said, you know, as the lobbyists came in and out of the office, and he said, well, sometimes Congress has to be shamed into doing the right thing. And this has become the forgotten war. We don't want to think about it. We're going to think about ISIS, or we're going to think about some new boogeyman. In the meantime, this thing goes on, and the generals are showing up now saying, oh, we just need a few thousand more soldiers, without explaining how a few thousand more soldiers is going to change things when 100,000 didn't.
Right.
And, you know, are we going to go for it? Are we going to re-escalate? That's certainly what the beneficiaries of the war want. The military wants it. God knows the military-industrial complex wants it. Congress wants it, because who pays to get them elected? And we're just throwing good money after bad. There's a great, when I get there, the book says hopeless but optimistic, and people are saying, what's the optimistic part?
I was just about to do that.
And I don't know if this exactly answers it, but my level of cautious optimism has to do with that great business phrase, sunk cost bias, you know, where it good business people know you don't throw good money after bad.
Right.
And so the beneficiaries of the war are throwing out this term, well, we've already invested so much blood and treasure. Donald Trump's a businessman. He's gone bankrupt 4 times.
Yep.
He knows when to throw in the towel.
Yep.
Will he do that? I don't know. You know, are we going to re-escalate? Or, you know, the other phrase that people are using is the beneficiaries are saying it's a stalemate.
Yeah.
This isn't a stalemate. It's a failed war.
And how do you get out of it? That is the question. Because the consideration is you need to exit a situation like that with honor. You remember the old line from Vietnam, peace with honor. But there was no honor after that.
I think, as we all recall, the communists and the North Vietnamese did win.
And not only that, one of the most famous pictures of the second half of the 20th century was the helicopter on top of the embassy with all the people trying to get on board. Let's get out of here.
Well, you understand that I've spent a lot of time in the U.S. Embassy in Kabul,
mm-hmm.
which is a giant compound. And I am now seeing articles where they're trying to figure out, do they have enough helicopter pads? Does this happen today? Does this happen tomorrow? I mean, now we're sort of trying to define victory as Kabul hasn't fallen. You know, we can maintain a semblance of a proxy government there, which is, again, among the most corrupt on the planet.
Right.
Which is generally considered to be feckless, which is, mm-hmm. you know, with elections that are at best a farce, which we pay for, by the way, $300 million per election, I think, some crazy amount of money. They're sham elections. They bear no resemblance to elections as we know them.
Right.
And the Afghans say, well, the Westerners want this, and then they give us the aid money, so what do we care? We'll do this.
We'll humor them.
Yeah.
What next? Do you go back to Afghanistan at all in the near future?
I never know.
Do you want to?
At some point, I certainly do. The Afghans are extraordinary people. I have the highest regard for them. And I see them as very resilient. I see them as very courageous. There are a lot of chapters in Hopeless but Optimistic that talk about their love of beauty, their love of poetry, the way they see the world. And the great historical culture that it is, with really strong cultural bonds and a love of religion and love of family. They're quite extraordinary people.
That was Doug Wissing speaking with Big Talk's Michael Glab, All episodes of Big Talk are available on the WFHB website, wfhb.org.
Support for WFHB comes from Lauren Wood Builders. Lauren Wood Builders is a family-owned company that sources local materials and local craftsmen to minimize environmental impact and sustain community. More information is available online at laurenwoodbuilders.com.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, make a difference. Volunteer.
Hi, my name is Ellen Jacart, and I volunteer with MC Iris. And MC Iris stands for Monroe County Identify and Reduce Invasive Species. Until I retired at the end of last year, I worked on Natural Areas Managers, directing management of the Nature Conservancy's preserves in Indiana. MC Iris was a way to work locally in places that really weren't part of my job, but that I lived close to and really enjoy getting to know and recreating in. This is something that I knew once I decided I was going to retire, that MC Iris I'm going to keep doing because I just enjoy it so much. You know, the people that I work with out in the field, and because it is my backyard, you know, to be able to go to these beautiful places and know that I can help make them better is just a really satisfying feeling. What's inspirational about the group to me is that there are so many landowners in Monroe County who really care about their land, that they really want native plants and pollinators and wildlife to benefit from their land. And MC Iris helps us all make our land as diverse as possible by working to control invasive plants. Cascades Park just stands as such a wonderful example of the difference you can make. You go out and you see an area that is covered by Asian bush honeysuckle and garlic mustard. And then you look at the places that have been cleaned up by MC Iris and City Parks workers and other volunteers. And you realize this is what brings you all of our native wildflowers, our blue phlox and celandine poppy and Jack in the Pulpit and Spring Beauty. And you can remake that nature preserve and bring back the diversity that's lost by invasive plants. I think one of the ways that MC Iris has made a real difference is that we have volunteers in our group who will go out and meet with any landowner in the county. If you own land, you can ask MC Iris to come and visit. And we have taught dozens of landowners in the county how to identify the invasive plants on their land. So we kind of bring the education. And by doing that, I've gotten to see a lot of different parts of the county and helped people start what they didn't know how to start. They didn't know how to identify. They didn't know how to control. But we're basically seeding this information throughout the county. And then you can see and hear from these people on what a difference it's made on their land. One of the biggest problems with invasive plants is that people feel overwhelmed. Once they learn and they look and they say, oh my gosh, it's everywhere. But you learn techniques and strategies on how you can work on your land and bite off as much as you can chew this year. And there's no reason to feel overwhelmed. Together we can make this happen. The vast majority of the invasive plants that we're battling were planted deliberately as landscaping plants. And so we encourage people to make better choices and give them ideas of what native plants they could use in their landscaping instead. Sustaining Nature and Your Land is the name of our annual event, Snail Day, and it'll be June 10th from 9 until 1 in City Hall. And what we do is we talk about invasive plants. People can bring any invasive plant, any weed from their yard that we want. We have the weed lab set up with experts, and you can ask, what is it? How do I control it? We'll have talks on how to identify invasive plants, the native plants you can use for landscapings. We'll be giving out $5 vouchers to people to buy a native plant out in the farmer's market, which will be going on at the same time. It's a great way to learn about MC Iris and the kinds of things that we do. Thanks for listening. I am Ellen Jacart with MC Iris.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. You may visit bloomington.in.gov/volunteer to find and sign up for local volunteer opportunities. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Brooks.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin and Jonah Chester in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Activate is produced by Lucy Shake from the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumsdane, Scott Schmadke, and Danny Graff. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Jonah Chester.
And I'm Carolyn Vanderweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast as well as other WFHB news programming online at wfhb.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
And stay tuned for KiteLine, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system. Coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcast of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.